Hello and welcome to the Majlis Radio Free Arab Liberties Current Affairs Podcast focusing on Central Asia. I am Mohammed Tahir, the host of the Majlis Podcast and Radio Free Arab Liberties Media Manager here in Washington, D.C. Independent media is under new scrutiny in Tajikistan. New regulations are passed to restrict the independent reporting. Journalists who cross the red lines are beaten up and some are denied accreditations. And in recent days, family members of Tajik journalists and activists in exile are questioned, apparently in retaliation to their reporting about COVID-19 in the country, which authorities have unsuccessfully tried to hide from public eyes for a long time. It's been never easy to be a journalist in Tajikistan, and it just got worse. On today's Majlis podcast, we are here to revisit the state of the independent media in Tajikistan during Corona times. To discuss all these, I'm joined by Mirzo Salimpour, the founder and chief editor of Akhbor, an independent news site focusing on Tajikistan, Sirojuddin Talibov, managing editor of Radio Azadi, Radio Free Republic of Liberty's Tajik service, Jean Cavalier, Eastern Europe and Central Asia director at the Reporters Without Borders, Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Republic of Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us today. So let me start with you, Mirzo. You are the journalist I was referring to earlier, whose family members were questioned. I understand there might be some security concerns, but as much as you can share, tell us, please, what happened.
The campaign of crackdown against me and the members of my family continues for more than 1 year. It begins from oral attacks by pro-government trolls. After then, my brothers were targeted, and in result of this crackdown, my little brother lost his job in Tajikistan and forced to leave his wife and five children in Tajikistan and went to Russia for labor migration. And now he's locked inside Russia because of quarantine and doesn't have any opportunity to return to his loved ones inside the country. Another, my brother, who lives in Moscow and has some mental problem, he was targeted by Tajik security officers and forced to write a lot of posts against me in social medias. But unfortunately, he told me in a private conversation that he was forced to do it and he didn't have any other choice to avoid this crackdown. Another case was 1 week before, on July 4th, when the wives of my brothers were invited to Tajik General Prosecutor Office and interrogated for many hours about me, about when my dad and mom died, because of which cases they were died, and some very terrible questions like that about why they married two brothers of Mirzo Salimpour, and it was after 20 years they married to my brothers, and
It's very terrible,
but it's a real situation in Tajikistan and the real situation what we faced.
They were clearly trying to break this family, I guess. That's the intention, seems to me. Since we have Mirza colleagues, since we have Mirza among us, if there is anything you would like to know, please feel free to jump in. My questions will never end, so don't wait for me to invite you. Jean, at this point, do you have anything to ask to Mirza?
No, but I just I can comment his case. Unfortunately, it happens very often in Tajikistan, and this harassment of journalists is is made by the authorities on a very regular basis for journalists that can still do their job, because many of them, I think that more than 20 of them have fled the country since the president's cracking down in 2016. At RSF, we make a press freedom index, as you may know, and Tajikistan is ranked 161st out of 180 countries in our last index. So it's colored in black on the maps. That means press freedom situation is very serious. The country was in red last year, so we've noticed a degradation. Right. The situation of journalists has worsened. And it's even more in recent months in connection with the coronavirus epidemic.
Right, right. You know, for full disclosure, let me also mention that Mirzo is a former Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty journalist, where he was with our Tajik service. So we have lots of shared connections with Mirza. And also, personally, one of the additional connection is my earlier role as the director of RFL's Turkmen service, where I have constantly dealt with the type of situation Mirza is going through. It's just so painful. Sirojuddin, maybe I should bring in here. I mean, the stories that we heard from Mirza, does any of them sound familiar as you work with lots of journalists in Tajikistan?
Frankly saying, this is Mirzo's case is not a sole one. The authoritarian rule allows to control over the internet throughout the country, and many journalists who try to be independent are harassed, imprisoned, detained. We know the cases when a young journalist was beaten recently,
right,
just for trying to cover the story of people who were living in shelters. And this is not a rare case. The network of journalists are very weak. It has been weakened by the government, and because many journalists are in prison, and those who had free voice were silenced, and many of them don't have any option but to leave the country or to keep silence.
So
can I add an information about Abdullah Gurbati, the case you mentioned?
Yes, we have latest news from Abdullah Gurbati, which was issued by the Interior Ministry of Tajikistan. Officials said that they cannot provide state security to him because his life is not in danger. This is what they said. Because a community, a small group of journalists asked government officials, authorities, to provide security to him as he has been beaten twice. But today, officials said that there is no danger on his life, so he can freely work. That means that the pressure on journalists will continue.
And he used to work for Asia Plus, I guess, right?
Yes.
You know, I like this direct interaction between speakers. That's lovely. Keep going. So about this renewed kind of pressure on journalists, is it because of the COVID-19?
It can be used as a small, you know, sign. The persecution started many years ago, frankly saying. Few years of free media lasted. When the persecution of opposition groups started, simultaneously, they started pressurizing on independent media as well. Online authoritarianism, that's what I would like to call now, because many people in Tajikistan use internet extensively, and this online authoritarianism in Tajikistan is spreading. The government is exerting control over the internet architecture within the borders of Tajikistan, and it is enacting as governance structures that allow them to control the country overall. The current policy is allowing top policymakers, including the family of the president, to exert greater control over the internet.
Can I add also that the authorities have monopolized internet access since 3 years now, and that's a very important question, as you told. We at RSF try to unblock websites in different countries to fight against state censorship. And I think, Mirzo, we can announce that we recently unblocked Akhbar website in Tajikistan. So we will announce the new Mirror sites in a few days.
It's very interesting because Akhbar.com is one of the few free media outlets that give, you know, alternative news to the people of Tajikistan. it remains as a bastion of free media throughout the country.
Along also your website, Sirajuddin, Radio Azadi's website, I think that's also blocked, right, for some time already?
Yes, it is blocked from time to time. We can't say that it is constantly blocked, but we are facing different kind of pressure as we have office there. Authorities are trying to stop the activity. They are trying to stop journalists to be more active by not giving them the accreditation. Even if they give accreditation, it is very limited for 3-6 months. There are rules in Tajikistan. If you are a journalist, if you work for foreign mass media, you must have accreditation. Without accreditation, you cannot work for foreign media. So if you violate this rule, you can be banned forever. This is why it is very dangerous zone. So journalists are trying not to violate that rule.
I don't know how much you are comfortable talking about this, Rajuddin. If you are, tell us about the current status of your accreditation process. How many people got it? How many people are under this temporary accreditation process, like with 3 or 6 months? And what's the situation there with your accreditation challenges?
Several of them have been applying for more than a year. Some of them have applied several months ago. They haven't got them. Few of them have accreditation, but it is very limited. And the rest have no accreditation, but they have been told by the foreign ministry that they can work for Azadi until their case is considered.
How is the situation has been affecting your work, Sirajuddin?
It is, we're trying, you know, to give balanced and well-sourced stories. We are trying not to make any kind of mistakes. It is difficult, but it is not impossible so far. I don't know how long we can survive, but it will depend on the decision of the authorities.
Yeah, but I'm sure that your workload in Prague must have increased a lot since you are not receiving the level of reporting that you used to from Tajikistan because of those challenges. And about your reporting, Sirajuddin, sorry, I'm asking too many questions. Recently, you guys had released a huge investigative report talking about the actual impact of pandemic in Tajikistan. Has there been any reaction to that report by the authorities?
No reaction at all, but they are extensively using trolls in order to downgrade our work. But we expected that there will be reaction. However, so far, no reaction at all, neither negative nor positive. At least we can satisfy ourselves by saying that, you know, so we managed to do something which, as a result, people can benefit from that.
Right. Bruce, now we have been talking about a number of challenges here. Mirzo's case, very painful. And also the attack on Asia Plus journalist, and then the online scrutiny by the authorities. Number of challenges we are talking about here. So what is that authorities are worried about?
Well, obviously, this has been going on, John mentioned, for several years now. You know, so first we remember that, you know, all of a sudden the Islamic Renaissance Party of Tajikistan lost its seat in the 2015 elections. And by the end of the year, they'd come up with some kind of story about them supposedly being involved in this alleged mutiny attempt by someone who was actually appointed by the secular government officials. So, you know, and then the journalists started to leave anyway. Now, what happened? Why is it more of it happening now? Like I said, they've always been hostile to independent media.
Right.
But this year, of course, you know, everyone knows they got the coronavirus in Tajikistan. And remember, Tajikistan is one of the last countries to say they had it. And they said they didn't all throughout April. And they were running mass events and everything. So, I mean, they really messed up big time, you know, and the government should be in for a lot of criticism. There's a lot you could criticize them about, but they never want to hear this kind of stuff. So they had to start shutting down media outlets that were broadcasting about, you know, what might be the more credible figures for how many people were infected, how many people died. Because we know that the figures the Tajik government gives aren't you just can't believe them. You know, after they finally admitted they had some, all of a sudden it took off. You know, they went from having none to having more than 100 in no time at all. And it went so fast that you could tell it was already there. But so they don't want to undercut their credibility more than it has been undercut by themselves already. So, of course, they're trying to keep control of the information to make it look like they are doing something, like they are being effective with their policies instead of the truth, which is that they've just totally ruined the whole thing. I mean, they lost control of it early on. They don't know what they're doing. And then added to that, they have presidential election coming up in November. This is the time when you want to be able to at least make a show of saying the people support us. Now, when you have thousands of people infected, maybe thousands of people dying, campaign, you're not going to get much popular support. And even worse, if they're going to try to transfer the presidency from father to son, there's got to be popular discontent has got to be at an all-time high, you know, in the last decade, maybe even two decades in Tajikistan. It's already poverty-stricken. Now it's got this illness, and there's presidential elections coming up. So the government's trying to do what they've done all along, is keep control of the news and say it's a happy country, we're taking care of all your problems, don't worry about it.
Yeah. Mirzo, during the corona times, the objective reporting couldn't be more important for people in Tajikistan, as the official channels are not providing balanced information about it enough. You know, I hear from my own Tajik colleagues, from Sirajuddin and Salim John, the director of RFL's Tajik service. They have been getting lots of traffic from Tajikistan to their websites for their social media. What has been traffic to your website from Tajikistan during these times? Of course, you were very much focused on reporting about real situation related to COVID-19 in Tajikistan.
During the crisis related to coronavirus, the number of our readers increased twice. And I felt effect of information when we published a video from a funeral ceremony of top official of the Tajik prosecutor office. He died in April of coronavirus and was buried with very strict measures. And when we published this video, after a day, we saw that many people inside Tajikistan begin to wear masks, begin to stay at home, avoid to go to streets, because they acknowledged that the risk of coronavirus is true. Till that, they think that coronavirus is something live, and anyway, it couldn't affect Tajikistan because Tajik authorities said that we don't have any case and we don't allow coronavirus to enter our country. But when they saw that coronavirus exists, and even top official of prosecutor office who has money, who has relation in top levels of health ministry, he couldn't save his life. And after that, people became more curious and begin to wear masks and count of coronavirus very seriously.
Thank you, Mirzo. I know, Jean, you want to say something. And also, kind of, I was wondering about, you know, you just come on board as the director of Central Asia and Eastern Europe Division at the RSF, and you are dealing with these extraordinary challenges. And it must be overwhelming to you, too, I guess. Yeah, go ahead.
I just wanted to add about the journalist that the authorities in Tajikistan accused them of sowing panic. But on the contrary, it's a lack of transparency that causes panic, that encourages disinformation, not the media coverage. So it was important for me to underline that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's definitely. We are going to talk a little bit about that and also go into details of the upcoming, some of the big political developments that are expected, which obviously going to draw lots of critical attention. But before that, let me recap the discussion that it's just not only physical pressure that we are talking about today against journalists in Tajikistan, but the authorities have just passed a bill, I guess, that was that closely deals with the press and the way things are reported in Tajikistan. So what is next, especially at the time when a number of events in the pipeline in Tajikistan, which will obviously draw, as I said, a critical look into the direction country is headed. So what is the future holds for independent press in the country, and is there anything we can do about it? Let's continue the Majlis podcast talking about these and many other questions very shortly. But first, let me recap the debate that today I'm joined by Mirzo Salimpour, founder and the chief editor of Akhbor, an independent news site focusing on Tajikistan, Sirojiddin Tolibov, managing editor of Radio Azadi, Radio Free Europe Liberty's Tajik service, Jean Cavalier, Eastern Europe and Central Asia director at the Reporters Without Borders, Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi. I'm Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe Liberty's media manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C. And we are discussing the renewed pressure on independent media in Tajikistan and the future of the independent press in the country. So about the law, maybe Srajitin, we could start with you about the law, if it is passed already. I recall my conversation with Salim John, the director of RFL's Tajik service earlier, that you guys had to rush with the release of your COVID-19 report because the media bill was coming to the parliament the next day. So the bill was brought in, I guess. So what happened with that? Srajitin, are you with us? Okay, as Srajitin joining, John, do you would like to take this question, what this bill was about?
Yeah, in fact, we've seen that this new law could have a very disastrous chilling effect and increase self-censorship and, of course, violation of the right to information, because no anyone that provides false or inaccurate information, I mean, information that authorities define as false or inaccurate about COVID-19 could be fined up to more than 1,000 samani, and nearly twice the minimum monthly wage. So that's very huge. And we can suppose that only the data provided by state structures will be considered as accurate and truthful information, of course. And I can add also that under international law, nothing justifies that public authorities have the power to decide what is true or false, to restrict the right of the media or a person to freedom of expression just on the ground that what they say might be false or inaccurate. So, of course, RSF denounces this law. But we are not the only one, because I've seen an appeal from the heads of 15 civil society organizations, newspapers, and leading journalists of Tajikistan that have asked the president to not to sign this law, but this appeal was totally ignored.
I could add that after the bill was approved, many journalists, many media begin to publish only official information from Tajik Health Ministry. And even Tajik activists who started to do alternative list of victims of coronavirus stopped to complete this mission, and the name of last victim, which we could see in their website, is from June 14. After that, I think they failed to continue this mission and stopped their activity, unfortunately.
So, Mirza, what does this law mean to your work?
My website is based in Prague, right, and banned in Tajikistan, and so it's not a matter for me, because I am banned by anyway. Yeah, I will continue to do my work, and I am not dependent only on official information which provided by Tajik Health Ministry. But for domestic media, for journalists who are working inside the country, is very dangerous, because Tajik journalists doesn't have so big salaries to pay $800 or $1,000 as fine for about coronavirus.
Yeah, or the information that authorities don't like to see published anywhere.
Every information which authorities don't like, they could represent as incorrect.
Yeah, they label them as incorrect. I wish I could ask this question to Srajitin. I think he's dropped. Bruce, do you like to add anything into this, what this law is about and what it's going to do with very limited space for independent media in Tajikistan?
Well, I mean, it basically gives the government not only the opportunity to say you're lying, but to then say, and we're going to punish you for it. I mean, I thought John put it perfect when she said the government decides. I mean, it's not written like that, right? It's real unclear who is supposed to be the judge of what is and what is not fake information, but in fact, everyone knows that it would be the government or someone that the government is support, you know, paying to come forward and say, no, this isn't right. No, that's not right. You know, and when that's what you have to deal with, it puts you in a real bad position. Anything you say almost can be, if they don't like it, they can say, no, this is wrong. And we have an expert who will explain that this is wrong. And since you published fake news, here's your fine for fake news.
Yeah. Bruce, your this challenging assessment also brings me to another very important development that's going to come up very soon in Tajikistan, and that is the presidential election. As you said, it's coming during this very high time when Tajikistan and the whole world is still struggling how to cope with this pandemic, and that is a recipe for lots of negative press about Tajikistan. So what I'm saying is if a journalist wants to keep reporting about these developments, what a price journalism is going to pay for their reporting in Tajikistan and what it means about the future of journalism in the country.
Talking to me?
Yeah, I'm just wondering about the environment in which they have to work after this law passed, and now lots of kind of very major critical developments are coming up. What are the environment that journalists will be working?
Yeah, say I'm based in Tajikistan or something like that, and they decide that Rustam Emomali is going to be running for president, current president's son. And I say he's got no experience, he doesn't know what he's doing. And then I can say, no, he was the mayor. That's fake information. He was the mayor of Dushanbe. He's the speaker of parliament. You know, how can you say he has no experience when, you know, the point is that he was given these jobs because he's daddy's boy. He doesn't know this kind of stuff. He might have picked up a few things. But, you know, he's also got like a military rank, too. But he's never been in the army. You know, so, you know, it's just things like that where I could just simply say he didn't have the experience to do the job. And they could say it's fake. We're fining you because that's not true. You know, technically, I suppose it wouldn't be true, but, there's a lot of things you can say about, even if it was the current president going up there. And I said, you know, his recent record as president has not been good. He really hadn't done much for the country. Well, you know, now I'm in trouble again because they'll say, look, he built this, he got this done, he had this new program, you know, so that's fake news and we're going to fine you for that too.
Yeah, you know, they have this now power, I mean, the sort of legal power in their own hand to do whatever they want to do. This kind of leads me to question what the future holds for independent journalism in Tajikistan going forward under these circumstances. Jean, if you like, you take this question too.
Mm-hmm. I think the future is not brilliant, of course. I mean, it depends on what will happen with this presidential election. And it will depend on Rustam's personality. So it's difficult to know.
It's certainly.
But
go ahead.
What is very worrying also, if I can just add a word about that, it's that there has been a meeting on Friday with the OSCE partner, Organization for Security in Europe, and along with the region, Tajikistan authorities have decided to block the renewal of the mandate of Ahlem Desir, the representative on freedom of the media. And so we are very deeply concerned by this blockage, because if he's not reappointed, procedures mean that position could be vacant for at least 6 months, and the office cannot function on its own without a representative in place. So this move could effectively shut down this mandate entirely until consensus could be reached on another candidate, if at all. So, and I underline that his mandate is crucial to the defense of media freedom across the OSCE region.
Right.
In Tajikistan and all the countries in the region.
Yeah.
So it's really an attempt once again to weaken the representatives' watchdog role.
Wow, that's very interesting. So with the type of laws that we were talking about, with that they are shutting down the independent media locally and using tools like the ones in the OSCE, they are also trying to influence the mechanism, the organizations which are responsible for monitoring independent media in countries like Tajikistan. That's indeed concerning.
It's a critical institution in promoting media freedom in Tajikistan, yes.
And also, you know, we have been always talking about this with your predecessor, Johan Beer, that a new advocacy approach might be in order to deal with a situation like this, because what the press freedom advocates have been doing so far seems clearly not enough to deter the authorities, the ones you are dealing with, Tajikistan or Azerbaijan or Turkmenistan. Maybe what my question is actually, what is new in your arsenal to deal with this new developing situation in countries like Tajikistan?
With the coronavirus crisis.
No, with deteriorating media freedom.
We try to make pressure through the countries that have a relationship with the with Tajikistan, and to influence is international image. Of course, that's this external pressure. I think are the only way to change something. Of course, the work of the journalists on the ground and of the civil society is very important to put some limits to the power. But it's very dangerous.
Right, right. Mirza,
I think there is one opportunity.
Yeah, Mirza, I was just coming to you with a similar question. Like, you know, there are limits to what the organizations like Jana's organization or maybe OSCE can do in countries like Tajikistan. But whatever influence they have, just to help them, tell us, please, what can really help journalists in Tajikistan to do their job? I mean, when Jean, for example, goes to speak to the influencers, what should she keep in mind?
I think this situation will continue till the scenario of transfer of power from the father to his son will be completed in Tajikistan. And as I know, this plan is postponed until next year because some advisors of Imam Ali Rahmon advised him to celebrate 30th anniversary of Tajik independence and then resign and then give the power to his son. And so at least one more year we will be under this stricter situation, and we have to expect more restrictions, more crackdowns on media freedom inside the country.
Yeah, that's what you expected. Is there anything can make a difference, can help you to do what you're supposed to do as a journalist?
I think there is one opportunity. You know that Tajik government received very big financial aid from China during recent years, but China is very busy with its economic problems now, and we see that Tajik government calling again to international financial institutions like IMF, like World Bank, Asian Bank for more help in to solve problems which Tajik government has after coronavirus. And it's good chance to pressure short on international financial institution to
put condition.
I think they should put some conditions when they give new loans to Tajik government, right. And those conditions should include issues related to human rights, issues related to press freedom and other freedoms.
Right. John, I'm sure that you guys are working in this direction, right? I mean, what kind of reactions you get when you engage these financial institutions who gave loan to countries like Tajikistan?
Yes, our advocacy team, of course, is in touch with the financial institutions, so they can try to influence them to put conditions. And also we can do that secretly or publicly. Sometimes we have different strategies depending on the answers of this kind of institutions. Yes.
Okay, just final note, Bruce, of course, as a journalist who is focused on Tajikistan, and I'm not sure if you've been there in recent years, but if you look into this from the journalistic eye, is there anything, what are the best ways those journalists on the ground can be supported?
Well, you know, I agree with that. What Mirza said was absolutely right. Tajikistan has been donor dependent practically since day one of independence.
Right.
You know, when they can get money from Russia or China, there's not, you can't work on them that way. But if you can, you know, like the individual governments in Western countries or Japan, you know, and international financial organizations should also be instrumental in trying to explain to them that we, you know, we're trying to help you out, but you know, you have to show us that there's some positive change, because we want to help out a stable, thriving government that will last for a long time. And your policies are guaranteeing that you're going to end up with a different form of government, you know, just maybe 10, 20 years at the most, maybe not even that long. I don't know. You know, so that they should put some conditions on that kind of stuff. And from the diplomatic side, again, these same Western governments, and this has worked in the past, and I know from working at RFARL, that when the U.S. embassy or some European embassy or the EU really pressures these governments and says, look, this is too much. You know, you have to ease up on this one media restriction. Well, you know, if the Tajik government can turn to China and say, will you give us money? And they say yes, then of course they'll tell whoever, you know, the US or the EU, say, forget, we don't have to listen to you. But right now that's not true, and it might not be true for a while. And even then, China's getting kind of weary of having to bankroll Tajikistan for a long time. They're going to need other countries, other that can help them financially. And the embassy should be working on this, and I know they are a lot of times.
Yeah.
But, you know, they really need to explain it in very clear terms again and again. Your government is on the edge of falling. If it wasn't for financial help you were receiving right now from international donors, you would probably not make it. The Afghan war might wind down. It won't be very interesting anymore. And then you'll be left on your own with no one wanting your money.
Yeah.
So you better change now or change will be forced upon you later.
Right. You know, I always try to end the conversation with a happy ending, and it seems particularly challenging when you speak about Turkmenistan and Tajikistan. But I guess we have to end it here. Thank you very much, Mirza Salimpour, founder and chief editor of Akhbar, an independent news site focused on Tajikistan. Surojuddin Talibov, managing editor of Radio Azadi, Radio Free Radio Liberty's Tajik service. John Cavalier, Eastern Europe and Central Asia director at the Reporters Without Borders. Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, the Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. Thank you, colleagues, for your time today.
Thank you.
And this is from me, Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Europe, the Liberty's media manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C. Until next week, bye-bye.